From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You will probably know the voice of my guest today, Craig Ferguson. You can't see him, but he's wearing a Drew Carey t-shirt. Many of us know him from The Drew Carey Show, where he was Mr. Wick. He also wrote movies including Saving Grace, and his first novel is just out, Between the Bridge and the River. It's an amazing book, Craig, because to me, it feels like it's got that combination of sort of anger, wit, and compassion that kind of fuels your monologues and your sense of humor, I would think.
Thank you, and I think that's the truth. I mean, I can't stay married to one particular tone. I can't stay angry. I can't stay happy. I can't stay, you know, sad. I'm a human being, you know, so moods and emotions ebb and flow in the monologues, in the book, and anything I've done. Movies actually are particularly good for that because you're always looking for a mood to change. So they encourage it. But yeah, I think that's right. I think it's in order to be truthful, I have to keep changing the shades.
Well, it's interesting too because the book itself is also kind of digressive.
Yeah, I think it's become fashionable to say ADD, but I like to think I had ADD before it was fashionable. I think it's a mind which a restless mind. I find myself fascinated and drawn with details. So that if, for example, in a scene in the book, a waiter comes in to deliver a sandwich, then given a little bit of backstory in the waiter somehow is interesting to me. Do you ever remember, do you see that movie Run Lola Run a few years ago?
Mm-hmm.
I love that movie because, you know, when bystanders, I love the way it was told, but when the bystanders would come by and you'd get these flash frames of, you know, what had happened and what will happen in these people's lives, and it changes for each perspective and each story in that movie. I loved that movie for that because that's the way I think. You know, if you sit on a bus and you see someone else and think about their story, or driving to work today, you know, it was raining in Los Angeles and I see a guy pushing a shopping cart, a homeless guy pushing a shopping cart, and it's raining and he looks utterly miserable. And just for a second it occurred to me there must be a great tragedy leading up to him pushing the shopping cart. You know, nobody starts pushing the shopping cart in Los Angeles. There has to be there's a story to reach that point. So that kind of takes me off in those directions. I like that. I kind of find it marketable as well.
It's The Treatment. My guest is Craig Ferguson, the host of The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. He's also a novelist. His book is Between the Bridge and the River. You don't really explain the title in the book.
Between the Bridge and the River, I guess, is a conversation I had with a Jesuit priest. You know, when I asked, do all suicides go to hell? He said, yes. But added one codicil, because he's a Jesuit and they're the thinkers. He said, if, for example, a man were to jump from a bridge and genuinely repent his action before he hit the river, then he would enter the kingdom of the Lord. And I thought, I like that. There's always one last shot on the table. It's like pool, you know. There's always a shot on the table that you don't know about. And I kind of loved that, and so that's the title of the book. And towards the end of the book, there are three chapters in a row. One is called The Bridge, one is called Life on Earth, and then the chapter after that is called The River. And that's because that's the way I see it. In a meditative state, I see life as a chance to somehow redeem yourself and redeem your soul. This I started this book as an atheist. I was an atheist when I began this book. I'm no longer convinced that. It's too fundamental a stance for me now. I can't be an atheist. In fact, I'm so uncomfortable with fundamentalism that I can't even be convinced that my stance against fundamentalism is actually right.
You're too empathetic. That's your problem.
It might be true. Yeah. If I start talking to someone with a Swedish accent, I develop a Swedish accent in about 3 or 4 minutes in a conversation. That's kind of true. I think it's deep insecurity. More than empathy, or maybe it's a combination of both.
Well, so much about the book I want to talk to you about, but first I want to have you, if you could, since you're talking about religion, and that fits so much into what the book's about, describe what the book's about.
The book, I guess, is about four men, really, are the main characters in the book, I suppose. The men are George and Fraser, two Scottish boys who grew up in an atmosphere of some sectarian violence in Scotland, which is, you know, what I grew up in. And there's another two boys, Saul and Leon, who grew up as the illegitimate children. The same mother, but different fathers. Their fathers are Peter Lawford and Frank Sinatra. And their mother was a showgirl at the Sands during the Rat Pack period. And these two boys grow up, but they're adopted by a snake-handling cult in the South, and they eventually form their own church. And it's the story of how these four men intertwine.
It's The Treatment. My guest is Craig Ferguson, the host of The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. He's here with us today talking about his first novel, Between the Bridge and the River. We're talking about outrage and compassion. There's a section of the book that I've marked for you that I'd love for you to read, because it's a part of the book that actually sort of made me stop and go back again. You describe an African-American who was about to pounce on one of your characters in the book, and you sort of, that way you're talking about with Run Lola Run, what seems like a weird isolated incident, you sort of describe physically, physiologically, and emotionally who he is. If you could read that section.
Sure. The character's called Tebow. Tebow was unaware of his royal blood because 200 years previously, his great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, Musinga, had been captured and thrown into slavery during a raid by Portuguese brigands on his village. Musinga's ancestors had been related to the pharaoh and had drifted south after the decline of Egypt. This is not the kind of information that would have shown up if Tebow had ever tried to research his family tree on the internet. Musinga had fought the Portuguese fiercely, but the Watusi were heavily outnumbered, and their spears were no match against muskets and steel. Of 95 people captured that day, he was the only one to reach America alive. His two wives, whom he adored, and the three children whom he loved beyond all reason, died in the unbelievable squalor and misery of the slave ship. The experience of the slave ship was so intense, so brutal, so unjustified, so heartbreaking and agonizing that it was stored in Musinga's DNA as rage. Science has not yet identified that DNA can store rage or any other memory because the scientists, the grown-up geeks from the astronomy club, are too busy proving that genetics store really important stuff like the propensity to be overweight or lactose intolerant. But in Musinga's DNA, the rage was strong. It was there when he saw his American children born from his new slave wife and taken and sold off to God knows where. It was there the day he grabbed a fat white man's riding crop and pulled him from the horse and beat him to death with his bare hands. It was there the day he was hung, which was, of course, the same day he killed the boss. Musinga's rage spread out through the slave population, mixing with the rage of other captured warriors, both male and female. The rage fueled war, crime, and brilliance. In some descendants, it produced a nobility and drive that beggars belief. In some descendants, it produced the desire for justice and equality, for reparation and forgiveness. For other descendants, it produced despair and self-hatred, alcoholism, addiction, and depression. The rage turned inward and killing the host body as rages want to do. It seems that alcoholism and addiction are highly present among present-day African Americans, Native Americans, Aborigines, and Celts, people who are not without a certain amount of justified rage.
That section of the book, I mean, the book is really about how everybody is connected and
sure.
How small a world it is, both physically and spiritually.
And I think across the space-time areas. I mean, if you're, 25 people in a room doesn't sound like a lot of five people. 25 lives stretched end-to-end will take you back to Christ. You know, I mean, it's not that long, you know. I mean, I think that surprises me and interests me and worries me and comforts me all at the same time. And I think that to be part of something, to be part of the human race, to not live in a cave and be a hermit is actually the challenge.
I'm guessing that just living the kind of life you've led, you've always had this sort of interest in people anyway, and you were kind of storing up a lot of the people that you met. And I'm guessing a lot of them become characters in this book. In a lot of ways, this book's got to be autobiographical.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I think that, there's the little set of rules at the beginning of the book. There's one of them that says confession is a sacred rite enhanced by allegory, exaggeration, and lies. The culture that I come from, this kind of Celtic, half of my family are Irish, by the way, Irish and Scottish. You know,
oh.
So I think that the storytelling, the culture of the Celts, you sit around with a drink and a tale. And you exaggerate to make a good story and make it more interesting. And that I think, it brought me into this. That's why I do this, and that's why I've come to this point in my life. When I wrote this book, I didn't, you know, I didn't have a deal for this book. I thought I was going to have to self-publish this when I was finished. I thought, I'll spend some money and give it to my friends at Christmas time or something. You know, because I would not compromise on anything. And I find as I get older, I get much more kind of grumpy about compromising on stuff. I have a sense of time passing and I want to do things that I want to do.
It's the truth. My guest is Craig Ferguson. You know him as a talk show host. He's a first-time novelist. His book is Between the Bridge and the River. You're almost a couple of years into the show now. At what point did you feel like it belongs to you, that you sort of hit the stride that you wanted it to be?
I think with the show, it came in increments. That when I'd been doing it 2 weeks, Johnny Carson died. And rather than go and do a monologue that night, I just spoke about Johnny Carson without... I had no personal connection to the man other than seeing him on television, which, of course, was 99.9% of anybody's experience with. So I spoke about that. And that night, I think the show began to change because I stopped doing, you know, gags about, hey, how about those Yankees in the playoffs? I don't even know what that means, you know. I mean, so I stopped reading jokes off of a teleprompter. And then from that point, I think that happened. I said, look, I'm not uncomfortable wearing a tie. I feel like I'm at a funeral and the show's on at 12:30 at night and everyone else is dressed in pajamas or leather or custard or something and I'm wearing a tie and a suit. It doesn't make sense to me. And so little by little, it kind of loosened up. And I'm still in that process. The one thing I am clear about now, which I wasn't clear about when I started the show, was I will stop doing it when I stop enjoying it. And it will be sudden, and it will be that.
Has that been sort of the curve of your life, that you sort of suddenly just decide it's time to do something else and you do it?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there is especially in work. I mean that of course can have disastrous results in your personal life, but you know, I became a parent, and so the emotional dynamic changed. When I became a parent, I realized that commitment emotionally was actually extremely valuable. And the word commitment and what commitment meant to me emotionally was continuing to do something even although the desire to do it had diminished or changed, you know. But with work, I don't have the same emotional attachment. I tell stories the way I tell them. If it's a book, if it's a movie, if it's stand-up comedy, if it's a late-night television show, I'll express myself the way I do it because it's about the emotional experience, not the physical one, which, of course, I'm sure will damage me financially in my life, but that's a price I'm willing to pay.
It's funny. It seems like you're talking about the sort of schism that a lot of artists must have, especially working in as commercial a form as the movies or television, which is dealing with that line between professionalism versus devotion to the art.
I once had an argument with a guy called Brad Ball, who at the time was the head of marketing for Warner Brothers Pictures. Before that, his job had been the marketing for McDonald's hamburgers, and since, I don't know what he does. But Brad Ball, I had dinner with him, and he's a sweet man, but he said, you know, what people get wrong, Craig, is it's the movie business. It's the movie business. And I said, no, Brad, it's the movie business. It's the movie business. And that's where I realized at that point there was an impasse that we could never, ever bridge, which was he was in a business and I was, you know, some light-footed, effete character going around painting my little moonbeams in the sky, and I would always be meaningless to him. I was a necessary evil to him, and he was a necessary evil to me. And I don't mean that personally about the guy. I'm just meaning that was where we stood in the world. And I feel that way a little bit about, you know, art and commerce right now. It's like, if I was thinking about how many books I was going to sell, I was writing this book, I would be very unhappy with this book. If I'm worried about the audience too much, then I'm not going to do the best thing. I respect the idea. If I'm doing a late-night television show, I'm in people's houses. I'm in their bedrooms at night. So I try and imagine what my behavior would be like in a stranger's house as if I'm a guest. And I don't know these people. I don't know their religious beliefs. I don't know how, you know, all of the things that make them tick. But in the book, you're in my house, you know. So these are my rules. I don't have to follow the rules that apply in your house. So it's two separate, if you like, social situations. That's what the liberation is for me now.
Well, we're out of time. Thank you so much for doing this. If you ever get like another free half hour, please
sure,
come back.
Yeah, anytime.
Craig Ferguson, the host of The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. He's been here talking about his amazing first novel, Between the Bridge and the River. Again, thanks for doing this, Craig.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Ellen.
Our technical director is Mario Diaz. Bob Carlson is the editor. Gemma Dempsey and Mary Bradley are the producers. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.